It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Here's Janmark, shoots Rask, the save, rebound, deflected, they score. Rask was able to stop the rebound, and then the Stars coming late. Jason Dickinson popped it in, and the Boston Bruins will pick up a point tonight, falling 1-0 in overtime here at the American Airlines Center.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And we welcome in a new member of the Hockey Show family. Ty Anderson joining me in studio this week.
What's going on?
Good to have you here.
Oh, I'm pumped to be here. This is the good stuff. This is what I'm here for.
2 hours of hockey talk. The only thing better than 2 hours of hockey talk is 3 hours of hockey talk.
It's true. And you keep going on and on and on. Then it's 24 hours before you know it.
Well, we have a lot to get to today. We will check in with all of the other members of the family today as well. Just to give you a quick rundown, Joe Haggerty will join us coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll talk with Billy Jaffe at 9:35 this morning. Bob Beers at 10 o'clock and Judd Surratt at 10:35. Bruins in Phoenix tonight to take on the Coyotes. And actually, Glendale, right?
Glendale, yeah. A little bit outside of Phoenix.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a
wonderful part of the world.
Yeah. It really is middle of nowhere, I think. If you look at Arizona, it's like, what are you doing? Talk about the problems. That's why.
It's not in February.
That's true. It's terrific in February.
It's a dry heat. That's what they all say.
The last time I was in Arizona a few years ago for a Bruins game, and there was a dust storm, which is not something you get around here very often. But my phone started going off, and there were warnings, and sure enough, you could see it coming in across the desert. Couldn't see, like, 2 feet in front of you.
That's nice. I mean, that's better than the alternative. I think once I went to an Islanders game, and it was just raining, and I think, like, the arena was, like, almost flooding, they say. Because if you went to the old Nassau Coliseum, you entered at you were above sort of the balcony. Like, the ground level was the balcony.
Right.
So if it rained a lot, I think there was some trouble there. But I remember that happening at the hotel I was staying at and at the arena. So that was a lot of fun.
All right, so let's get to it. All kinds of things going on with the Bruins right now. Do we start positively? Do we start injuries? I mean, the positive last night is that with basically two of your regular defensemen, I mean three, I guess, if you want to count Kampfer, but you managed to hold the Dallas Stars scoreless for 60-plus minutes last night, and Tuukka Rask stepped up when they needed him.
Yeah, I think
coming off of the layoff with him last week, I don't know that you could have asked for anything better last night.
No, I think it's really has a 1-0 loss felt more like a win than last night. I think that was one of those things where you're looking at that roster, and then you're looking at what the Stars have done on home ice, and you're saying, there's no way the Stars aren't scoring 4 or 5 goals tonight. Like, that is just the way it was all shaping up, the way it was lining up. And they played great. I really thought they played well. I thought Jeremy Lauzon and Matt Grizzlick were a pretty good, solid top pairing. You know, your top pairing by default, if you will.
Right.
And, you know, so I think surviving games is how this team is going to have to win games right now. With this many losses, with this many guys missing, you're not going to win games, you know, 2-1, I don't think, 3-2. Like, you're going to have to really grind these out, if you will. So I thought last night, all things considered, was a good showing. I think if we're talking positives, the biggest is Tuukka Rask, right? Because this is a guy that he misses 4 days or whatever for leave of absence, comes back, p- post 36 out of 37. I mean, that is as good as it gets for Tuukka, all things considered.
Well, and it didn't. I mean, when the first shot that he faced trickles through and gets to be pulled off the goal line by Torrey Krug, didn't exactly instill me with a great deal of confidence. But from that point on, you know, there were a couple of dicey moments, but there's going to be, one or two that hit the post or got behind him. But you know what? Ultimately, it was 60-plus minutes of shutout for him. You should win that game. Look, for all the scoring woes that this team has and all of the injuries that this team has, if your goalie can pitch a shutout for 60 minutes, you should win that game.
No, absolutely. And I think that's the negative side of it, right, is that that's a game that you got to win. You have to win. At least you got a point out of it. It's a non-conference team, if you will. But you look at that, I mean, this team has to find scoring beyond the top line. If the top line doesn't do anything, this team is in serious trouble. And I think you see that every single night. I mean, I think Joakim Nordstrom was their leading, you know, shooter last night. I think he had 5 shots on goal, most on the team. Back-to-back nights of season-low shots on goal. You know, 23 shots in Colorado, 23 shots in Dallas. So that's the big issue for me right now. You know, look beyond the defense. Look beyond the injuries. This team is not generating enough offense, especially on the road, especially in tight games, and it is coming back to hurt them right now.
Well, to that end, you know, looking for secondary scoring, the potential of Patrice Bergeron being significantly injured last night, gets ridden into the boards, obviously banged up his shoulder, was grabbing at it at multiple points from that point forward when he did come back from the locker room, couldn't take faceoffs late in the game, didn't play in overtime. I mean, that's a huge concern. The expectation, we heard a clip from Bruce Cassidy earlier today, expectation is he probably is not going to be able to play tonight. What that means going forward, we don't know. We know Patrice Bergeron is a really, really tough person. For him to be in as much pain outwardly as he was last night makes me really nervous, because without him, you know, you don't have, I mean, you still, Marchand and Pasternak are still very capable, but if you break up that line, you legitimately have nothing as far as scoring on this team.
No, it's true. And Riley Nash is gone, and he was sort of your Bergeron fill-in. David Backes was a Bergeron fill-in before then. I don't know if you want to play him at center. Where do you go? You know, that is a real thing right now, that I look at this roster and I say, okay, if Bergeron's out long-term, who gets that job? Who goes there? Because I don't think they trust Forsbacka Karlsson enough to give him that role. I don't think, like, again, Backes can do it. Nola Chari, I don't want him doing that. You know, it's really hard to find the guy that you go, okay, that's what you do there. So, I mean, maybe you do break up that line. Maybe you do say, okay, Pasternak's with Krejci now, and you put, you know, whoever with Marchand, and hope that Marchand can carry that line and drive that line. But you talk about all the defenseman losses. I mean, this is the close thing to losing a defenseman up front as well. Bergeron's their best, you know, D-zone center, their best penalty-killing forward, and now he might be out too. And you don't know how long he's going to be out, but, I mean, this is sort of everything that can go wrong right now is going wrong for this team in terms of their health. And last night, you know, when you see a guy come back, I think he took one face-off upon his return, and you looked at the look on his face, and he was in agony. You know, it was like someone just took a bat to his spine. I mean, he just couldn't do it. So I do think that this is something that they need to monitor. It's November. You know, that relatively speaking, they're in a good spot. So I'm not chancing it with Patrice Bergeron right now. I'm not.
No, you know what? I was almost surprised he was back out there at all last night. You know, when he goes to the locker room in the shape that he was in, and then he came back out and he just kind of sat on the bench for a little while, I thought, you know what? Just let him sit there. Like, this game isn't important enough to risk him potentially taking another hit and making it worse. One other note as far as the injuries go, Fluto Šintala reporting this morning, Chara's 4 to 6 weeks with a knee. Grand scheme of things, probably not as bad as it could have been. You know, just if you saw the clip of that collision the other night and the way that knee buckled, there was some concern that, on my part, like, Zdeno Chara could potentially be done. And if he's done, he might be done. Like, if he's done for the year, he may not be back.
No, that was a terrifying-looking collision. I mean, I looked at that, and I was like, oh, man, that looks like a torn ACL. I was like, oh, that looks bad. And then he flies back to Boston. You don't get an update on him, you know, until Fluto late last night. I'm sitting there going, they haven't announced anything. Cassie says that he's anxious about it just as much as everyone else is. And I'm sitting there going, this guy is done for the year. I was like, and if that were the case, I mean, you're talking about the potential end of a historic career. Yes, he would play beyond this year, but we saw how the ACL recoveries are with Dennis Seidenberg. He was never quite the same player. And these are different players, right? You're talking about a 6'9"
guy. In his 40s.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And so that was scary, but yeah. I almost read that last night, and I said, wow, that's actually the best-case scenario. I mean, obviously, the best-case scenario is he's back out there, and he finishes the game, finishes the road trip, right. You know, whatever. But
the moment they put him on a plane home, it's like, you know,
exactly.
It's not good.
I was sitting there going, wow, this is going to be either season-ending, or this is going to be 2 months, 3 months. This is going to be something bad. Like, this is going to require a procedure. And who knows? Maybe it still does. But ultimately, you should feel pretty good about 4-6 versus 8-10 or 15 and beyond.
All right, let's squeeze in a phone call or two because we got a very busy show today. 617-779-0985. Maria in Watertown is up first. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. You stole a little bit of my thunder, so to speak, because I was going to focus on the positive, which was Tuukka did look good after that initial goal that Krug saved for him. His angles looked pretty tight, and I think he did a great job of keeping the bees in the game. My bigger concern is, there are two concerns that I have. One is the fact that I don't believe that the Bruins are a hard team to play against. And I'm going to go back to my refrain from the earlier week, which I think they need an enforcer-type player on this guy. Not someone that's just going to go out and hammer people, but someone who's going to make other teams look over their shoulder. I don't think that the Bruins are going to have a lot of success unless they get a guy like that on one of their lines. And I'm really concerned about David Backes and Nola Chari. I think they only have 1 point between the two of them, given all the games that they played. David Backes just doesn't look like the same player, and that contract is looking like a big noose around the neck of the Bruins at this point. And lastly, I want to hearken on something my Twitter friend Mike from Woburn brought up last night, which is the officiating. An abomination. That call on Marchand was an abomination, and the fact that Bishop didn't get whistled for embellishment as well, those referees should hang their heads in shame. And I don't understand why we can't hold these officials accountable. Players and the media, and this is, I'm repeating what Mike said, players and coaches have to face the media after a game. Why don't the officials face the media and have to answer those questions? It's beyond ridiculous at this point. Ty, it's good to hear you back on the radio. Thanks for the time.
All right, thanks, Maria. We're going to get into the officials when Billy Jaffe joins us in about 20 minutes. That was one of the things we want to talk about with him, because it's not just Marchand, it's not just the Bruins, it's a league-wide issue that he's seeing. So we're gonna hit on that. As far as the physicality, last night I see, you know, Patrice Bergeron gets hit. It's a borderline hit. Probably should have been a penalty on that. He and Brad Marchand ending up in the penalty box in the third period because they're having to stick up for themselves is not good for this team. But if Kevin Miller's healthy, they don't have to do that, right? I feel like if this team has more of its regular cast, they probably don't have to do that. I'm not willing to go down the enforcer road because that's not the biggest problem this team has right now. It's not even close to it.
No, I rank it probably fourth or fifth on list of concerns at the moment. I think, to your point, if Kevin Miller's back, this kind of crap isn't happening. They don't have to do this. I think if you're talking about adding a player that brings toughness and is tougher to play against, you know, she has concerns about Achari and Backes, and rightfully so. These guys haven't looked right all season. But those are the guys that you sort of lean on to say, okay, you're the toughness. You're the hard to play against kind of guys. Achari hits like no other. I mean, the guy hits like a truck. So, you know, when he's rolling, he's a good fit there. He doesn't fight as much. He's more of a clean kind of hitter, if you will. Backes is a guy that you don't want fighting because of his concussions, but he's a guy who's shown a willingness to do that. I think if you're adding toughness, they need to do more than that. They need to do more than fight. They need to do more than just scare teams, if you will, because we've seen this now in this league now for a few years. Teams will dance around that player. They will make that player look stupid. So I think that's something that I worry about. You know, if you're the Bruins and you're devoting actual time and resources to finding that player, and that player's going to play 7-8 minutes a night, relatively ineffective if he's not fighting. That worries me. I don't really think they need that. I don't think they want that, especially if you're talking about going against Toronto or Tampa. I mean, these guys will make that player look stupid and make you look stupid for going out and getting that guy. So that's something I worry about there. It all depends what else they bring to the table, because this team could always use another penalty killer, in my opinion. They can always use another guy who can win draws. If you can get a guy who can do that and he's known as a tough customer, then yeah, maybe. But right now, I'm not the enforcer game. We've been down this road before, right? I mean, Ronaldo was sure. The last guy, and that was a disaster. So I don't know. I just think that they are the dinosaurs in this league now, so it's hard to get those players.
All right, we'll continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985 is our number. Ty Anderson is sitting in with me for the 2 hours. We'll talk with Joe Haggerty next.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Ty Anderson here in the Town Fair Tire Studios this week. We will be checking in throughout the show with our regular cast of characters. And first up is Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston joins us now. What's going on this morning, Hags?
Ryan, Ty, good morning. Good Saturday morning.
So we were talking about the injury bug with this team. I mean, this might be a difficult question, but what's the bigger concern right now? Is it Zdeno Chara being out a month? Is it the possibility that Patrice Bergeron might be out for some extended period of time?
Well, I think they're both pretty horrendous scenarios. I don't know if one is any worse or better than the other. I mean, I'm not with the team, so I am not getting the update on Zdeno Chara's latest, but I did see Fluto's report that it's 4 to 6 weeks. You know, I think that is a fairly good diagnosis, and all things considered, not surprising, because we've seen this with Chara before, where, you know, he has these injuries that look bad on the ice, and he's like the Terminator. He manages to come back and return in a reasonably short amount of time. They don't ever seem to be season ending with him, and, you know, a lot of times he's able to even avoid surgery too, which is pretty amazing as well, and, you know, probably speaks to his conditioning and his, you know, freakishly good physical body. But, like, you know, that's concerning, I think, obviously, because they're missing so many defensemen right now. And losing your best shutdown defender, your most experienced guy, when you're shuttling guys from Providence into that lineup right now. You know, two guys last night, Spoyle and Clifton, making their NHL debuts. And you've got a lot of other, you know, pieces that you're trying to make work that aren't your regulars in there right now. So the Chara thing may be more important just based on their situation right now. But obviously, Patrice Bergeron is the best player on that team. If you're missing him for any extended period of time, it's going to be bad and it's going to hurt. And given the lack of scoring depth on this team and the fact that you're hanging so much on Bergeron, Pasternak, and Marchand right now, that makes it even worse. And, you know, watching that play last night and watching afterwards, it sure looked like it was the left shoulder area that was giving him problems. He couldn't take faceoffs really after he came back. He was trying to play. You could see him at times flexing that left arm and wincing in pain. And, you know, at one point you could see you couldn't even really hold the stick in that hand. So, you know, you hope it's not a serious shoulder injury that's going to keep him out for a long period of time. But, you know, that was a pretty nasty collision he took into the boards. And you were surprised a little bit that he came back. But I think, you know, he feels responsibility to this team with so many players out of that lineup to get back in there. And he's absolutely the toughest SOB I've ever seen as far as coming back from injuries, too. So you kind of knew he was going to come back. You just don't expect him to play today in the second day of a back-to-back given what happened last night. And you wonder how long something like this might keep him out for.
The possibility of losing Bergeron, what do you do if you're Bruce Cassidy? I mean, you know, obviously there's the immediate of what do you put out there tonight. But we've been talking for weeks about, do you break up that Bergeron line? Do you move Pasternak down with Krejci? You know, now, like, what do you do?
You know what I would do? I would try Nordstrom in the middle in place of Bergeron in between those two if he's out. You know, he's played a little bit of center this year. I think he's looked good everywhere they've put him. He's a solid two-way guy. Certainly you're not going to get the offensive component like you would with Bergeron. But I think he was pretty good at center in all other facets. And, you know, there's almost a Riley Nash thing with him where he's a good two-way player that maybe will kick in a little bit of offense. He was actually really good last night. I thought it was, you know, one of his better games. And maybe you put him in there as a stopgap in between those two, keep Marchand and Pasternak together, try to keep some of that offensive dynamic together of that top line, and keep everything else status quo, and try to, you know, keep the ship from taking on too much water as they seemingly lose a player or two every single game, and hope that some guys start to come back. But, you know, it's not an ideal scenario, obviously. It's going to continue to compromise their ability to score goals. And when your ability to score goals is compromised, wow, you're missing, you know, so many of your regular top six defensemen, you start to wonder how you're going to win games and what exactly you can hang your hat on. And, you know, you better hope that Pasternak continues to score goals at almost the pace of a goal a game, and that Marchand can really start getting hot goal scoring wise too, and maybe they can carry you for a little while. But I'll tell you this too, Ry, if those guys continue to take hits and those guys continue to have to do things to stick up for themselves because they're getting targeted by other teams, it's not going to be too long before they might be out of the lineup too. And I think maybe I heard you and Ty talking before, you know, getting a tough guy that can put a little fear in the other team might not be the top priority now. But I can tell you what, if somebody takes a run at Pasternak and knocks him out for 2 months, all of a sudden it's going to become a priority for everybody. It's going to be too late by then. You know, they traded away Adam McQuaid before the season started. And, you know, I know, I think he's still hurt right now, but they miss that kind of element on this team. That guy, even Kevin Miller, he's a tough guy, he's a hard hitter. I don't think he brings that McQuaid-like fear into the other team when he drops the gloves and really goes after them and polices things. And Zdeno Chara is just not that guy anymore when he's in the lineup. I really think they could use a guy like that. And they're not going to have to give up a lot to get him. And it might be worth it for the protection of your star players who are just getting abused right now.
Talking to Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. The more I think about the Chara injury and the possibility that, you know, or not the possibility, it's, again, it's being reported he's out 4 to 6. I almost kind of wonder, look, obviously it's going to be a tough sledding here. Hopefully they're getting some of these guys back here over the next couple of weeks and, you know, and can get some semblance of an NHL caliber roster on the defensive end. But I almost kind of wonder if Chara is able to come back at full strength after the knee injury, if this may not be the worst thing in the world to have him take a month off at, you know, as he approaches his 42nd birthday, because, you know, at the end of the year, you know, if you go the way that you hope this team goes, he's going to be playing a lot of 25 and 30 minute nights.
No, it's not horrible from that perspective. That's certainly the silver lining.
I mean, that's a real glasses right half full type of outlook for me. But
I appreciate that, Ryan. You know, a little optimism here or there, especially when half the team is seemingly on the injured list, isn't such a bad thing. But I mean, your point is well taken. Obviously, you know, him getting some rest in the middle of the year, I think it's good given his age, given the wear and tear, and given, you know, what he's expected to do on a nightly basis, and given, you know, where the Bruins are right now, that they have the benefit of being in a division that's fairly poor. And, you know, there's some teams they're going to be able to beat up on, and I don't think they're going to fall too far behind a playoff spot. Sure, certainly they may fall behind now, you know, Toronto and Tampa a little bit, but I still think they'll be within, you know, shouting distance, if not in a playoff spot while they're going through all this stuff. So, you know, as long as that remains the case and as long as they start to get guys back, and I know Kevin Miller is probably, you know, closing in on a return at some point, and, you know, you hear McAvoy and Backinainen are both making strides as well, and, you know, I don't think they think that Carlo is going to be a super long-term thing, so you may start to see bodies filter in as well. And, you know, they did it last year too, right? They did a pretty good job when Chara was out with that injury, that upper body injury, and, you know, they managed to survive towards the end of the season with that, and certainly they did the same thing with Bergeron when he was out last year. They banded together, and they were able to play reasonably well without him in the lineup. A different team, I think there was a little more depth on last year's team, particularly during the regular season. I think there's, you know, a lot more youth in spots now that isn't playing quite as reliably as they did last year, but, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. But, you know, a little rest during the midseason for Chara is not the worst thing in the world, and I appreciate the Ryan Johnson optimism right now.
Joe, earlier this week it was said that the LA Kings were considering retooling and maybe shedding some of their contracts. Given some of the issues that the Bruins have had scoring-wise, depth-wise, both up front and on the back end, Are there any players that you look at, you know, on the Kings and say that could be a fit for the Bruins, that could make sense for this team, you know, via trade?
I mean, you know, Jeff Carter's obviously a guy that can score in the league. You know, you'd probably be looking at aging players that you'd be taking on from them that are established, maybe. But, like, I'll be honest with you, I'm not that interested in most of the LA Kings players that are going to be available in trades. That team looks to me like it's an old and slow team. And, you know, they tried to hang on and just keep retooling with the older nucleus that won the Cups, and it's really starting to bite them now and dragging them down. And, you know, I think that's not really the element that you need. And you might be able to get somebody that you can bring in right now that could be better than what you have, certainly from an offensive and scoring perspective. But I think as far as, you know, the trade landscape goes, they're better off just waiting and seeing what shakes out closer to the deadline. And I still would prefer a guy that's a little younger, got a little bit more left in the legs, maybe has got a little bit more cost certainty for a longer term. And, you know, I still think they absolutely, if they could get a guy that can score and a guy that can fight and has a little meanness to him, or at least can throw the body around and can be physical and can bring a little more size and smile to that group up front, which I think is a little too small and a little too young in spots, I think that would be a better play. You know, waiting around to see what happens with the Flyers and waiting around to see if Wayne Simmonds becomes available, I don't think is the worst thing in the world.
All right, Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. Appreciate the time as always.
You got it, boys. Take care.
All right. We will continue. We'll go right back out to the phones and talk with Billy Jaffe coming up. We'll get into some of the officiating last night and around the league.
Phones on phones,
What's that?
Phones on phones today.
It's just everybody's traveling today. So, you know, that's why you're here. Right?
It's true. Thank God for all the phoners.
We'll get to Billy coming up next. Sarge gives us Sports Hub headlines. We continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Sports Hub headlines.
Well, the Bruins lost in overtime to the Stars, 1-0 last night in Dallas. Jason Dickinson, game winner on Tuukka Rask, who had 36 saves in net. First start between the pipes since taking a week-long absence.
I thought we played a solid game. Big battle, you know, obviously missing some bodies in the defense, and, you know, everybody battled. We played a pretty solid game, and, you know, resulted at one point.
Patrice Bergeron did leave the game in the third period with an apparent upper body injury. He is not expected to play tonight in Phoenix, that according to head coach Bruce Cassidy. Brad Marchand, 18 penalty minutes. Bruins will play at Phoenix tonight against the Coyotes. Jed and Bob have the call on the Bruins Radio Network, driven by the award-winning Honda CR-V, starting at 7:30. Some good news about defenseman Zdeno Chara. Fluto Shinzawa of The Athletic reporting he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks with a knee injury he sustained against the Avalanche earlier in the week. Celtics 123-116 overtime winners against the Raptors at the TD Garden last night. Kyrie Irving, 43 points. Toronto's Kawhi Leonard, 31 points, 15 rebounds. Celtics go for their third straight win tonight. They'll take on the Utah Jazz at the TD Garden. Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell with the call starting at 7 o'clock over on 105.7 FM WROR. The Jazz last night lost at Philadelphia 113-107. Jimmy Butler had 28 for the Sixers. Red Sox have re-signed World Series MVP Steve Pearce to a one-year $6.25 million deal. In college football today, over at Fenway Park at 12 o'clock, Harvard takes on Yale for the 135th time. Boston College on the road against Florida State. UMass at Georgia. And coming up at 2 o'clock here on the Sports Hub, from Yankee Stadium, number 3 Notre Dame goes up against number 13 Syracuse. Headlines are brought to you by Kiel Vodka, the first American-made premium light vodka. Smoother, lighter, better-tasting vodka with only 58 calories per serving. Kiel Vodka, stay balanced. I'm Mike Riley on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update in 30 minutes.
Press the right hand, save. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Ty Anderson with you here until 11 o'clock. We go right back to the phones now. We're joined by Billy Jaffe, of course, part of the Nesson Bruins coverage on a regular basis. Although, you off to an NHL Network this weekend?
No, I'm back with Nesson tonight. I had a much more important event last night. My daughter Julia's musical at her show, which, you know, Hamilton used to be my favorite show. It's my second favorite show. Last night, the day school cabaret was outstanding. And that's not just a proud papa.
It's getting rave reviews in the theater section of the Globe this morning. I don't know if you've seen that.
It should.
Yeah.
Darn right it should. I mean, it was great stuff. And got home, watched the game, and back at, actually, I'm ready to coach Junior Eagles this morning and then ready to get ready for the Boston Bruins and the, don't call me Phoenix, Arizona Coyotes with their retro funky new uniforms.
All right, let's start with something that Maria in Watertown brought up this morning, Billy, and I know you wanted to talk about it as well, not just related to Brad Marchand and the Bruins, but the officiating around the league. For the second time in recent memory, we saw Marchand get, you know, called for kind of a phantom penalty last night and then exacerbated by taking another 10 minutes on top of it. The officials, it seems like, you know, it's one thing to miss a call. It's another thing to really kind of point out that you missed the call by going above and beyond and taking away one of the more dynamic players in the game right now. What's going on with the officiating? Because it's not, as I said, it's not just here. It's, we're seeing things like this around the league.
Yeah, you know, to me, and I was invited to be on the ice this past summer, the end of the summer in Buffalo, with the prospects camp for the officials. It wasn't the actual officials, but we're a pool of prospects. It was 90-plus skaters from around North America that they're trying to, you know, open up the eyes to. Some are officials already. Excuse me, some are recently retired players that they're trying to make into officials. The reason I'm bringing that backstory into it is their philosophy right now is that you give me a great skater that wants to do it, and I can turn him into a good official. You know, I'm a huge proponent of the officials. You know that, RJ. I don't know if you know that or not, but having officiated 4 or 5 years in college hockey and juniors, you know, I love what those guys do because I know how hard it is. But I'm losing it a little bit right now because they're losing the feel of the game. The feel of the game. We have a lot of good referees, too, in the last 3 years retire. A lot of guys in the early 50s, mid-50s, that now are going out to retirement. We've seen a lot of guys in their late 20s, early 30s. Although that sounds like a little more mature than, let's say, a 19-year-old player, officiating is a hard business, fellas. And they're losing the feel for the game. And they're calling what they think they should instead of what they know they should. And there's a difference. And it's hard to understand that. But right now, RJ, last night, I wouldn't call that a phantom penalty. I would call it a bad penalty. He did touch him, no question about it. He put his stick towards you. But that, to me, is a penalty that's called at junior, or I'm not junior, but youth hockey. Because, okay, you don't need to do any youth hockey. But at the NHL level, come on. Then the problem with Brad Marchand, and I'm sure you guys have already talked about, is you don't need to take the towel and do that. You don't, because now you're showing up the officials. Any level, you're showing them up. That deserves what he deserves. But they're losing the feel, the communication with the players, all the little things. And there definitely is becoming a bit of, you can see a divide between the veteran officials in the league still and the younger guys in the league, and that concerns me.
All right, so let's, putting that aside, because we are going to talk more about that later, but we've only got you for a few minutes. So let's talk about some things that happened around the league this week, including, you know, we've been kind of waiting because the Bruins, we know, are, you know, going to be in the market for trades and things like that over the course of the next few weeks and months. We see one this week between the Kings and the Penguins. Ty brought it up earlier that the Kings seem to be open for business right now. Jimmy Rutherford in Pittsburgh, never shy about not only dipping his feet in the water, but diving in head first, decided he needed to shake up his team a little bit this week.
Well, yeah, he's pissed off at his team last week. He's not happy with them at all. And came out in a very public interview with his team radio network and talked about how there was going to be a trade made. There's a very good possibility, you know. And by the way, I love how Jimmy Rutherford announced this trade of Tyler Hagelin for Tanner Pearson. It was during the press conference when they announced his new 3-year extension as GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins. He said, yeah, there's going to be, it's clearing the NHL, clearing house right now. You know, there's going to be a trade. I mean, I love it. That's Jimmy Rutherford doing tea. He's not shy. I don't want to, there's, you know, it's a lot of times you hear people talk flippantly about, I'll trade you my, my garbage for your garbage. I don't like that. I don't like calling people that. I'll call it recycle bin. Now, Kyle Hagelin wasn't having a bad year. This wasn't a great year. Pearson was having a pretty bad year. We have no goals or one goal at the time. I mean, he is the kind of player where you put him in the right stead, the right lineup. I mean, I don't know if he's really more than a third line left winger. They're going to try and play him with Malkin to see if they can get him going. A couple of years ago, Pearson had some good years. He's like 26, maybe 27 years old, so he's still involved in the prime of his career. But that was definitely saying, all right, change the scenery. Let's change yours for ours and see if we can get something going. L.A. has to clear cap space. They have to. They have to get themselves to an area where they can bring in young players, and it's going to be a little painful. Maybe Chicago Blackhawk-like. They're going to be top-heavy with Doughty and Kopitar, but they need some young, fast guys on that team. Otherwise, it's not going to work there.
Yeah, looking at that roster, Billy, I asked Hags, and I'll ask you the same thing. Do you look at that roster and see any pieces that the Bruins should be interested in or make a play for, you know, whether it's now or whether it's by the deadline later this season?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a few that I like, and I've talked to some GMs and scouts about some guys. Here's the thing. I mean, I'm going to say some names right now that I don't think are available right now, but could change down the road. The first one that jumps out at me, although one guy who's an assistant GM in the NHL isn't enamored with Tyler Toffoli's skating. I like his potential, and I've been saying that for a couple of weeks now, the last 2 weeks. I've been saying I think that could be a solid right shot for the Bees. Now, he is also young at 26, but he's still scoring some goals for them. He's got, 5 goals on the year for them? I don't know. They might think he's still part of that, we'll call it a core there. Two other guys that could interest me, I mean, Alec Martinez, he's a defenseman. You know, can you fit him in? But he can skate real well. He can move well. There's something that maybe could be done down the road. And believe it or not, now this, I don't have his contract in front of me, but, you know, is there something left in Jeff Carter's bag? And could he be the guy down the road? Maybe as the year goes on and they realize they just don't have it. Can they take a little bit of salary back and then Bruins put in a third center in Jeff Carter? But don't gripe at me. Don't at me. I don't know how many years he's got left on his deal, so I fully admit that I'm ill-prepared to say 100% him, but if he's available, he would interest me, believe it or not, because I think he could fit in well here. Now, granted, it might take some maneuvering, but maybe, just maybe.
3 more years, Billy.
No, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm not going to at you about it, but yeah, three more years after this one at $5.2 million per season.
Yeah, okay, maybe not. But I was hoping it was maybe 2 years they could take some back. That. You know, look, they're stuck with Kovalchuk out. I'm curious about Drew Doughty. I think they've got to keep him. And then, obviously, the big guy, obviously, Kopitar. You know, I'm going to give you one other guy that I really like. I just don't know if you can get him. It's going to probably take a bounty. Jake Muzzin. You know, I think he could be. I think he's good. I don't know if he's great, but I think he's good. On the other hand, you see the Bees. But, Jesus, everybody healthy. The Bees are fine on the back end. I know you guys were talking about it on Bruce Lewis before. I've never seen this from a team defensively. When I was with the Thrashers, at one point, we had to use 5 goalies in something like 10 or 11 games. It was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But defenseman-wise, I've never seen this. I've never seen this at all, the demise of the Bruins D.
All right, a couple of things in the Bruins division I wanted to touch on. Number one is that the Lightning lose Andre Vasilevskiy for some time. He's got a fracture in his foot. Looks like he's going to miss a month, maybe longer than that. And at the same time, Buffalo's coming on here and making some. They're actually now third in the Atlantic Division, a point ahead of the Bruins. Just touch on those two teams briefly, and you know, is Buffalo for real? And how is Tampa going to be able to weather losing their number one goalie?
Well, you know, in Louis Domingue, they trust now. Louis Domingue is the goalie that ended up going from Arizona. And I'm kind of giving you the cliff note version last year, to basically being out of hockey, playing, you know, going to practice. I think it was for a Canadian college team or junior team. And then he gets an opportunity to come back. He works his ass off. He comes back, and he then becomes Tampa's backup at the end of last year. Had long talks with him during the playoffs, a refocus, a rededication, almost like a rebirth for him. Now, can he be a starter? I'm not convinced. He's 6-4-2 so far. They're going to have to play him a fair amount right now. It's a real good team. I mean, anytime you have Hedman back there, you have McDonough, you have Strawman. So They've got great presence in front of them. We'll see if Louis Domingue can carry the load for up to 6 weeks. By the way, it was a practice injury where Vasilevskiy got hurt getting hit in the foot. With regard to Buffalo, holy smokes, I mean, I thought they'd be better. I did not think they would challenge for a playoff spot, but I thought they'd be better. You know, I thought they'd be not Ottawa, not Detroit near the bottom. But, you know, Jeff Skinner, nice acquisition, second in the NHL in goals, 14 points. Eichel has a different maturity, a different confidence level. Now, he's not perfect, but it's getting better out there. It's a better surrounding cast. You know, last night they have a victory. They get it in the extra time. And Phil Housley said this is the type of game last year we would have broke. This year we just bent. We didn't break. So when you hear those hockey cliches or sports cliches, RJ and Ty, you understand the team is starting to mature. Kyle Poso is playing better out there. Are they for real? It's a lame answer. I'd like to see them after the 40-game mark, but, you know, what I'm seeing out of them and Carter Hutton, Hutton had some nice saves last night in Winnipeg. You know, if they can hang in there with goaltending and their defense to me enough, sure, I guess they're in there. All of a sudden, the Atlantic Division, fellas, is better than the Met. You know, it's at least top-heavy-wise. It's amazing. I mean, this is so early to say this, but I'll do it anyways. It's what we do. There could be five teams from the Atlantic this year versus just three from the Met, which I never would have thought would have been the case.
All right, Billy, we'll let you go, and good luck with the Junior Eagles this morning.
Junior Eagles against the Junior Flyers. A lot of juniors on the ice. Thanks, guys. Thanks talking with you.
There's Billy Jaffe. You can catch him on the Nesson broadcast of the Bruins game tonight, of course. Early start for a game in Arizona tonight, right?
Yeah, I'm used to these 9 p.m.
Eastern
games.
Face-off.
This is a little earlier. You'll take it, though. You know, nothing like staying up late and watching them lose, right? That was everyone's complaint on Wednesday night.
Right.
Game ends around, you know, 12:10 or whatever it was. And
I'll admit, I did not make it.
No?
I did not make it. I set the DVR and headed to bed.
No,
It's been a busy week.
It's one of those things, man, where, you know, once you sit down and get into it, it's hard to look away, I think, no matter how bad the team may be playing. I lived through 05, 06. I can live through this right now.
All right. We will continue here. Another hour still to come on the Hockey Show. We'll talk with Bob Beers and Judd Surratt during the course of that hour. Ty Anderson is in with me here for the full two. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Here from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Crew on the road this week, Ryan Johnston along with Ty Anderson here in the studio. Bruins with the late night travel from Dallas on to Arizona for a matchup with the Coyotes tonight. Of course, you'll hear it here on the Sports Hub with Judd Surratt and Bob Beers on the call. And Bob Beers joins us right now. Good morning, Beersy.
Morning, guys. How are we doing today?
Nice and refreshed.
We're getting there.
let's start with the good stuff. Last night, the Bruins, you know, beat up defensively. They're missing their captain. They've got guys making NHL debuts, and Tuukka Rask is able to pitch a shutout for 60 plus minutes when they really needed him. Right? I mean, coming off of that layoff last week, they really needed him to step up, and he did last night.
Without question, they needed him, and yeah, he played well. It was good to see. You know, whatever happened with Tuukka when he came back, you know, I thought his words were interesting when he talked about, you know, thanking the organization and thanking his teammates, and you know, so there's that goes two ways, right? You want to make sure that you've got their back too, and for all the right reasons, come back and play well, and you know, because of all the injuries, because of, you know, personal situation, whatever the case was, he came back and he played a very good game, you know, against a team that can score, and certainly the top line can score, and you know, he had a little help early, but that wasn't, you know, a fault of his own. That was a pretty good give and go that slipped through his pads there, and Torrey Krug kind of kept one out of the net. I think Lindell hit a post early, or not Lindell, I think Fox hit a post early as well, but he was really good. I mean, that save he made late in the third period on Lindell coming out, challenging on the one-timer with his left pad, that was an outstanding save through some traffic. And that wasn't, you know, it was all game, really. So, you know, you knew that you're going to need a good goaltending performance. You're going to need it again today, whether it's him or whether it's Halak. I believe it's probably going to be Halak, but he was really good yesterday. And that, yes, that's a positive sign moving forward, hopefully.
Bob, when you look at the team in front of him last night, as Ryan mentioned, you had Connor Clifton and Jacob Zboril making their NHL debuts. You saw more of Clifton than Zboril, but overall, what do you think of their games?
Well, Clifton certainly made more of an impression yesterday. I think Zboril looked nervous, to be honest with you, especially early. But Clifton came in and played not being so nervous. You know, you look at some of the plays that he made. He came in wanting to make a difference. He came in with a little attitude. He was pretty good yesterday. I liked his game. You know, he's not a huge guy, but you know, his reputation is that he doesn't mind getting involved, and certainly we saw that in the third period. But even more than that, you know, he made some plays. He made a play in the second period that created a scoring chance for offensively, where he carried the puck up the ice and made him a nice pass over to the right side after making a nice fake through the neutral zone. You know, he looked like a guy that was comfortable and not nervous at all. Unfortunately, he had that penalty in the third period where he put one, drift one over the glass, but they got through that, obviously, and he looked good. Zboril, like I said, he looked a little nervous. You know, hopefully he's able to settle down today and play a more structured game, and we'll get a little bit better look at him here today. But you know, and don't forget about Lozan. I mean, he's on what, 7 games now, so yeah. You know, even though it wasn't his first game, he's continued to impress. And he played against him, and Grizzly were paired against the Sagan line the majority of the night. You know, that kind of went a little under the radar that those guys had to play against that line, and they did a pretty good job.
You know, Ty and I were joking off air earlier, and, you know, you've been around a long time and as a player and a broadcaster. I mean, it's not often you see a team that's down 5 legitimate NHL defensemen at the same time, and then you throw Vaakanainen on top of that, one of your, you know, first call-ups out of Providence. And I mean, we knew at times you're going to be tested depth-wise, but this is something like it's going overboard even for that.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like this. I mean, we've seen a lot of injuries, but I mean, this is getting a little ridiculous right now. It looks like there's some hope on the horizon, right? They think that Kevin Miller, he's been with the team and skating. It looks like he might play Wednesday. That's the target date for him anyhow. There's, you know, a couple of guys are still skating back at home. I know McAvoy among them. So hopefully there is some help on the horizon, but it got a whole lot worse when Chara went down the other day.
All right, so Patrice Bergeron gets banged up last night, and it was clear that even when he came back, he couldn't take faceoffs. He's really hurting. The expectation is that he's probably not going to be able to play today. If there's something, you know, significant wrong with him and he's out for any length of time, you know, how do you think they handle that? What do they do about plugging into that position? And, you know, do you keep Marchand and Pastrnak together at that point? Or do you try and, you know, and spread things out and hope that somebody can find a spark here?
Yeah, we, you know, throwing some things around last night after the game. Ryan, I honestly don't know. I mean, they're already down a center. You know, Forsbacker Carlson has come in, and he's been okay. You still want to see more from him. He had a good chance to score last night, but you just want to see a little bit more from him. You know, so they're already down that center. They don't really have it on their roster right now, and whether that comes from Providence or whether you're forced into making a deal, you know, let's wait and see the severity of Bergeron's injury, obviously. But yeah, it didn't look good yesterday, and the fact that he hung in there, you know, he's a leader. You know, he knows that the team's shorthanded. He wants to come back and play, and he did. It was hard seeing him out there, you know, just in pain like he was. So we'll see where he's at, you know, today and moving forward. But that's just a massive, massive loss. I think that they would probably split Marchand and Pastrnak up, to be honest with you, because, you know, you got to kind of spread it around a little bit now. But I don't know who they put in the center to go along with everybody else.
And to that point, I mean, you talk about the toughness of Bergeron and that leadership. I almost felt like it got to a point where, You know, if I'm Bruce Cassidy, I might just tell him, listen, I know you want to go here, but
yeah,
I can't risk you anymore.
I'm with you. That's you know, that was my thought. You know, watching him try to play that shift, that shorthanded shift, his first one coming back, and he took the face off, and he was in obvious pain trying to take that face off, and he wanted to get off, he couldn't get off. The puck was still in the zone. Then he had to get into a little battle to help try to get the puck out of the zone, and finally it did. He got over the bench, and you know, all eyes were kind of on him, at least mine were, and you know, it was just the pain that he was in was so obvious. And you know, then he comes out a few shifts later, you know, not taking faceoffs, but you know, trying to gut it out and trying to get 2 points out of that game. It just kind of gives you a pretty good indication of or a pretty good look into his mindset and his toughness, and you know, we all know that from years ago when he played with the punctured lung and everything else. So you know, the guys, you know, he's everything you want in a hockey player, and they're going to miss him if indeed he's out for any significant amount of time. And it just did not look good yesterday.
We had a question earlier about the possibility of the Bruins. I mean, and look, we, you know, you see what happens last night. Bergeron takes that hit. He's involved, and Marchand's involved with some scuffles in the third period last night. We had a question earlier about, you know, potential of adding a little bit more physicality or adding a little bit more muscle on this team. Is that something that you would be in favor of at this point, or are there bigger fish to fry?
Well, last night was, you know, I know that people have hinted at it before. Last night, I really, you know, it, to me, I really wish it was there. I mean, I wish an Adam McQuaid was on the ice. And, you know, I didn't agree with the way some of the calls went last night. So, you know, when you've got, you know, Marchand going after Fox, and then you've got, you know, Bergeron going after Fox in the third period, yeah, I wanted to see an Adam McQuaid out there. I want to see Kevin Miller out there. Obviously, Kevin Miller's hurt, but you know, it just, you go back a few years ago, and I know that the game has changed. I completely understand that. I know it's going in a different direction, but there are times where you wish you had somebody like that. And they really didn't have it in their lineup last night. You know, there wasn't anybody there that can kind of, you know, do that, I guess. And yeah, that was, I guess, the first time that I really said, I wish Adam McQuaid was in our lineup right now. Because that would, you know, that would have made things a little different, but we'll see. There are bigger fish to fry. They've got to get some guys healthy, and then see where they're at. But this is getting to a pretty ridiculous situation here, in the way that this has gone here recently. And hopefully they can start to get a little healthier here moving forward. But it, you know, your schedule's still, you know, it's not letting up here for a while. So it's going to take a little bit to trickle everybody back in there.
All right, Bob Beers will be listening tonight with you and Judd for an 8 o'clock face-off out there in Arizona. Appreciate the time, as always. Enjoy the desert.
Guys, we appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we will continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Want to get into more of the situation with Marchand and the officials. Marchand is the league leader in penalty minutes right now by a mile. So we'll get into that coming up. We can talk more about Tuukka Rask and his performance last night, and anything else you want to weigh in on. Now would be the good time, 617-779-0985. It's Ryan Johnston and Ty Anderson with you here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show, 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston, Ty Anderson is here with me for the first time, joining the Hockey Show family this morning.
It's nice. Is there like a, do I have to do like a ritual? Is there something I have to do?
We should have done it before the show, but yeah, there's like an initiation thing, but you know, Beers is out in Phoenix. It's, you know,
all right,
we gotta get that together, but there will, yeah, there will be some torture later. All right. So we've talked a couple of times this morning about Brad Marchand and his run in with the officials again last night. Second time in a couple of weeks we've seen this. Marchand gets called for a, you know, a bad penalty. He, the first time around, it was he's mocking, more than mocking the official, he's mocking the other player for, you know, for playing up a high stick that didn't happen. Last night, Ben Bishop buys a call, which, by the way, I don't blame him. If Brad Marchand does anything in my vicinity, I'm going to play act it because I'm going to get the power play. And that's what Bishop did last night. He gets a little poke. Oh, my knee.
That was unbelievable. Like, I know we're gonna talk about Marchand, but that is unbelievable how bad of an acting job that was on the part of Ben Bishop. And Ben Bishop is a known flopper. I mean, he's up there with Hank and with Mike Smith, in my opinion, as guys that embellish. Anytime someone comes near their crease, they throw in their head back, they're grabbing at something. You saw this, you know, later in the game. They almost duped the officials again.
Yeah.
Pastrnak skated by him, and he's like, whoa! It's just like, come on, man, you're not falling. Like, I know you're 6'8" or whatever, but you're not that clumsy. Like, you're an NHL goaltender. You've been a Vezina nominee before. Like, you're not that clumsy. So, I think Bishop, I mean, I'm my thoughts are with him for a speedy recovery, ultimately. But no, I mean, it's yeah, if Marchand comes near you, just grab your eye, you know, grab your
might
groin.
As well. You're gonna get the call, you know. So as I mentioned at the end of the previous segment, Brad Marchand right now is leading the league in penalty minutes with 66. The next highest in the league is 39. Right, it's Brad Marchand, and like you look at the guys on the list, it's Gudbranskin and Cody McLeod and Borowiecki, and like these are not exactly saints that we're talking about here. And Marchand's got almost double the amount of penalty minutes as any one of those guys. It's clear that the officials have had it up to here with Brad Marchand, right? I mean, that's obvious. The issue that I have now is we all know that, right? We all know that. Marchand's going to get called for things that other guys won't. But he's making the situation worse with some of the antics after the fact. Last night, it's waving the white flag, which it's funny, but it's going to get you 10 minutes. You know, the antics, as I was talking about after the Phantom high stick call, where he's, you know, poking fun at the player, and he goes overboard with it, and he gets extra added on. Now, you can look at that and say, well, that's the referee making their mistake worse by exacerbating the situation. But if Marchand, it's one thing to argue, it's another thing to show up the official or to try to show up another player and cost your team. And that's what he's doing at this point, is he's got to start taking responsibility, knowing the fact that they're out to get him, and say, okay, I've got to be on better behavior than what I'm showing. Because with Bergeron already banged up last night, they didn't need that, right? They don't need Brad Marchand to sit out 12 minutes of that game last night.
No, and it definitely hurt. I think you talk about this team and how they can't buy a goal right now at 5-on-5 or from guys, you know, besides their top line. You take one of the top liners out and the other guy is at less than 50%, I would say, you know, in Bergeron, and it does hurt. I think, you know, after the game last night, Cassie's comments were kind of telling. He said, you know, the officials need to respect Marchand more, but Marchand needs to respect the officials more. It's a two-way street, he called it. So, you know, there's some truth in that. I think that, you know, Marchand can bark and argue and do whatever he wants, and he's going to get hit with the extra two, the 10, more than Bergeron or Chara would because of his reputation. And it's a reputation that is earned. You know, you can't deny that he's earned this reputation. At the same time, you know, he toes that line because he's so damn good. You know, he had almost 40 goals back-to-back years. You know, this is a player who, you know, has evolved into one of the game's top scorers. So I think he's owed a little bit of you know, wiggle room, if you will, when he does get called for bad penalties. I hate when officials double down on their mistakes. I hate when they add a 2 or a 10 for arguing about an obviously bad call. But no, the way he's doing it is definitely different. It's more theatrical. You know, you're waving flags, you're pantomiming a player pleading for his life in Nashville, basically, with what he did there. You know, I think that's, you know, that's an issue. But ultimately, you know, the switch has to go off where he realizes he can't do these things. At the same time, though, I just hate when officials, you know, it seems like an ego thing, right? Where you can't let it go, so now you make it worse, and it's like, okay, well, you don't got to do that. So I'm kind of on the fence with this, like most things with Brad Marchand, because he's just so electric on the
ice.
Well,
he's entertaining as hell. I mean, last night he comes back out in the third period, sits in the penalty box, and you saw the clip, he's asking the fans, how much did you pay to watch me? Like the people that are chirping him next to the penalty box, he's like, yeah, how much money did it cost you to come watch me? Like that stuff is entertaining, and I'm a big believer in having villains in sports, and Brad Marchand is a villain in every other building in the league other than the Garden, because he plays the way that he does and because he reacts the way that he does, and he's a great guy to root against the same way he's a great guy to root for. I love having that in the sport. I don't want the officials to penalize that. I think the league should, you know, you don't want it to turn into a total gong show, but the league should celebrate that personality because there aren't enough guys who show personality in the game.
No, it's true. I mean, this league, unlike any other league, celebrates vanilla personalities. You know, like they want you to be a robot and say the right things, be a great teammate, smile all the time. I mean, the villains are great for hockey. I really do believe that. And sometimes, you know, I'm on board with villains. I don't like when they concuss people or injure people. Like,
no.
That will always get on Marchand for. Like, I'll always hate that element of his game. It will always bother me. But if he's just doing things like that, I mean, it's childish, it's immature, but it's entertaining. You know,
Licking a guy is, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that. He licked Ryan Callahan's teeth last year. That's gross.
It's disgusting, but it's funny. Like, as long as you're not asking me to do it.
If you can wave, you know, towel flags instead of licking people, I'll take the towel flags, I guess. But I just think that, you know, this kind of comes back to, I think, what Jaffe was talking about with these younger referees. Are they unsure how to manage Marchand? You know, like, does a veteran guy look at what Marchand does and just give him an extra two? Or they ignore it, you know, because he's Brad Marchand, and they're just like, whatever, he's going to do his thing in the box. That's what he does. You know, so I do wonder if that's an element here, you know, where these younger officials don't know how to manage Marchand, so they're just going, all right, that's it, 10. You know, I have to go back and look and see which official called what, of course, but maybe that's an issue for this team right now. I will say this, though. If you're ever near Brad Marchand in the penalty box and you want to argue with him, just don't do it. He's so good. He is so good at one-liners and just getting you about things you didn't even know were wrong with you. Like, as someone who's covered that player and known that player for a long time, he has never, never been without a comeback for somebody. It's incredible to watch. So I liked seeing that. You know, the towel waving, maybe not so much, but the chirping back at fans. Yeah. Oh,
we need more
classic
mic'd up Brad Marchand segments.
And that's the thing. That's never going to be in Behind the Bee. You know what I mean? Like, that's never going to make it into that show. And that's the stuff that I want to see more of. I mean, he's so funny. He's one of these guys, man. Again, always has a line for you. You know, no matter what you're saying, no matter how innocent it is or how dumb a question it is, you know, painless question, he has something for you every time.
Let's go to Richie. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, guys. I love the show. I listen every Saturday morning religiously.
Thank you.
I have a question, though. These goalies, they weigh 40 to 50 pounds worth of equipment. Where's the embellishment call on the goaltender? I mean, that was a little teeny lump cap. And this guy goes down like Marchand took a baseball swing at his ankle.
This is the problem with being Brad Marchand, right? Is if anybody else does that, like if that's any other player on the Bruins who does the same thing, Bishop gets called for embellishment, and you might not even take a penalty on that.
Yeah, and that was a part of the game last night that was really bothersome to me. Because so that happens, and they just call Marchand for it. But then Spezza's going down there, and he's hacking an elbow in Clifton like, all over the place, and it's a matching.
Give a two-hander, and they get matching penalties out of that.
And again, you know, Bishop is a flopper. He is up there. I mean, I think he's one of the most egregious floppers in the league. So I thought for sure they'd be matching because he acted like the caller is completely right. He acted as if he got just absolutely crushed, and he didn't. And he got lightly poked, you know. And again, he's selling it because it's Marchand. But this is something that this happens 50 times a game. I honestly think that those kind of slashes, those kind of little jabs, it's as frequent as stick checking, you know. And they were calling that for a while, and they backed off that because they realized it's part of the game. You can call it every play if you really wanted to. So I didn't like that call because again, you see this all the time. It's just not acted. out in such a dramatic fashion, you know, but it helps in the goalie, again, a 6'8" and, you know, can spin his whole body when he gets poked. So I hated the call. I hated that it wasn't matching. But again, it's the reputation call more than anything else right now.
Let's squeeze in one more quick one. Chris in Plainville, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys, with the defense last night, I'll tell you, watching Grizzlick or whatever on that game-winning goal, that is like, if you would take a tape, that is how not to play a 2-on-1 by a defenseman. It was absolutely hilarious. Not only did he put the goalie in limbo between the two, not making the decision and letting the goalie take the other one, he didn't even cover the guy who came in and got the rebound, which was the other guy. So it was, like, horrible. Hey, but that kid, that young kid, number 75, what's his name again? Begins with a C.
Clifton.
Yeah, I tell you, I like the way he plays, because you'd rather try to rein someone in who comes in from, you know, Providence or whatever, instead of trying to, you know, force a guy to, you know, play to that level. That kid might make mistakes, he might make aggressive mistakes, but that's a hell of a lot easier to handle than it is the other way around.
It's not a bad point, Chris, because you do see a lot of guys come in, especially defensemen, who are, they come in, they're kind of tentative, they're just kind of trying to feel their way through it. He came in, you know, like, I'm going to play my game. I'm going to go after it. And, you know, if he didn't look like he was afraid to make mistakes, and that's the best way to play sometimes.
Cowboy Clifton. That's his nickname. that is actually his nickname down in Providence, I guess. No, it's true. And that you're talking about polar opposites, right? Kind of like what Beers mentioned. I saw the same thing that he saw, where Zboril looked nervous and afraid. And after the game, he said that as much. He said, yeah, I was nervous out there. And he almost had a giveaway. I think it was Jamie Benn, almost directly resulted in a goal. It was like, oh my goodness, man. Like, you got to calm down. Clifton comes in, he's making plays. He ends up knocking the net off its mooring somehow. He activates and joins the offensive rush there. I mean, this is a guy that you want to see that confidence, right? Because those players, they last. I think when Grizzlick came up 2 years ago, he wasn't ready for that. He was timid. He was nervous. You know, Torrey Krug came up and was confident. You know, like, this makes a difference between guys that you know, need more time and guys that can sort of scam the system, if you will, and stick around for a while. And Clifton looks like a guy that, you know, if this team is healthy, he's not even coming up here, you know, late in the season. But right now, if he can take this opportunity and turn it into something, you know, he could move up the depth chart. He could be the organization's number 9 or number 10 defenseman versus beginning of the year as the number 13 or number 12 defenseman. Make a big difference for his career.
And he'll become very popular. I mean, plays the way he did last night. He'll be popular around here. People will like him.
19 minutes of ice time. Also had 9 minutes in penalties. I mean, talk about
night.
The coach trusting you. Yeah, you know,
absolutely.
You take 9 minutes in penalties, and the coach is still putting you out there.
All right, Judd Surratt will join us coming up next as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show on a Saturday morning.
Sports Hub headlines.
Celtics 123-116 overtime winners against the Raptors last night at the TD Garden, and a big night for Kyrie Irving.
Hayward for Kyrie, working on a 41-point night. Against Van Vliet, left-hand dribble, blows by him, gets to the mid-block and knocks down another one. The most shots made by a Celtic in the last 20 years. 18 of them for Kyrie Irving, 43 points. Celtics lead 119-112.
That is Sean Grady and Cedric Maxwell last night. Irving had 23 of the 43 in the fourth quarter. Toronto's Kawhi Leonard, 31 points in the loss. Celtics, they'll try to make it 3 wins in a row tonight. They'll take on the Utah Jazz at the TD Garden. And you'll hear from Grady and Max again starting at 7 o'clock over on our sister station, 105.7 FM, WROR. Jazz last night fell at Philadelphia, 113-107. Jimmy Butler, 28 for the Sixers. Bruins lost to the Dallas Stars, 1-0 in overtime last night on the road. It was Jason Dickinson with the game winner, a minute 34 into the overtime period. Tuukka Rask, first start in net since taking a week-long absence. He had 36 saves. Bruins continued the road trip tonight against the Coyotes. Judd Surratt and Bob Beers have the call on the Bruins Radio Network, driven by the award-winning Honda CR-V, starting at 7:30. Patrice Bergeron left the game in the third with an upper body injury, not expected to play tonight. But some good news from The Athletic about Zdeno Chara. He's expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a knee injury, where it looked like it could have been a lot worse there, or sustained that injury this week against Colorado. Red Sox, they've re-signed World Series MVP Steve Pierce to a 1-year, $6.25 million deal. College football today at Fenway Park, 12 o'clock kickoff time. 135th meeting between Harvard and Yale. Boston College on the road against Florida State. UMass is at Georgia. And coming up at 2 o'clock here today on the Sports Hub, number 3 Notre Dame at Yankee Stadium against number 13 Syracuse. Headlines brought to you by Kiel Vodka, the first American-made premium light vodka. Smoother, lighter, better-tasting vodka, only 58 calories per serving. Kiel Vodka, stay balanced. I'm Mike Riley. I'm Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jeopardy! Joe Murray's got you again at 11 o'clock.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub and the Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Ty Anderson here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Before we get to Judd, I do want to mention, because we were just talking about it off air, but I have to wish my buddy Mike Flynn good luck today. The Pingree School is playing for the, I think it's like the Class C, it's basically the New England Prep School Championship game today. Pingree versus St. Paul's, two undefeated teams. This is a chance for Mike Flynn to prove that he is not indeed Marty Schottenheimer, because in his flag football coaching, he has gone undefeated, I believe, in multiple seasons and has lost in the playoffs each time.
Ugh,
so
worst feeling
chance, a chance for him to redeem himself and prove that he can win the big one.
The start of a potential dynasty.
Yeah.
Well.
So
I didn't even know he did that until you told me.
It's the first year. It's like he took over the program this year. They've gone 7-0-1, and he'll be in with me tomorrow morning from 10 to 1. So that should be rather interesting either way.
Is this at Gillette?
No, I don't know where. I think it's up in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Yeah, Concord, New Hampshire.
Oh, all right. Yeah, so. I know Concord.
Okay.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I would. Very much like to see how he looks coming in tomorrow morning. It could be two different things. It could be he's happy, or
he's probably going to be hurt in either way.
Good point. That's a good point.
So good luck to the boys from Pingree today, and hopefully we have a champion coach in here tomorrow morning. We of course have more hockey to talk about. We've got Bruins and Coyotes coming up tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. The play-by-play voice of the Bruins joins us now, Judd Surratt from out in Arizona. Morning, Judd.
Morning, boys. Ty, good to hear you.
What's going on, Judd?
I'm good. Sun's up. It's a little frosty here. Got my toque on. It might be low 60s.
Yeah, very difficult. it's a wonderful time of year to not be in New England, I'll tell you that. All right, so we've been talking obviously a lot about the game last night and the injuries and all of that. You know, as you guys have been traveling with the team, and you know, you go from last weekend at home, back-to-back wins and pretty good wins over some decent teams last weekend, and then you know this road trip kicks off on Wednesday and things go south in a hurry. From the injury standpoint, obviously, but also, you know, the loss on Wednesday night. And then last night, Ty mentioned it earlier, it's a 1-0 loss that couldn't feel any more like a win by getting out of there with a point last night because of the way that Tuukka played, because of the way the young defense played. You had the Bergeron injury, and you managed to get through that, at least for the time being. It felt like if there's anything positive to be taken out of this trip so far, it's that, man, they're not quitting at all.
Oh, no, I thought that was a gutsy effort. And obviously, when you see the way Bergeron got hit, and I know at some point you've probably touched on some of the officiating that took place last night, but to see the way he tried to gut it out, he was playing with one arm last night, trying to take faceoffs, trying to stay in the game, and trying to be a factor for the team. And then to go right at Radek Foxa when he had the opportunity in the third period. How can you not be inspired? He is the essence of what the Bruins are all about. And you could see a lot of the guys on that roster, all of those guys on the roster, rise to the occasion last night in a fabulous performance backstopped by a guy like Tuukka Rask. If you go back to the game in Colorado, I think what's unfortunate is A, obviously, the injury to the captain, Zdeno Chara, but the way the Bruins needed to try and manage the game because they were clinging to a 3-1 lead. And the top line, Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon, along with Gabriel Landeskog, they started to turn the tide in that one. That was difficult for the Bruins. You wanted to see if maybe they could have had a different outcome. Played a few plays a little bit differently in the neutral zone at the offensive blue line late in that second period, in that third period, to maybe nurse out a point in that game. It'll be fascinating to see what they've got here today against the Arizona Coyotes, because the Coyotes are sitting here and waiting. They've been playing some better hockey. They recently lost a defenseman in Jason Demers, who's out of the lineup as well. What do the Bruins have? And what is Patrice Bergeron's availability heading into tonight's game? For me, I would think it's doubtful, but we'll get an official word from Bruce Cassidy maybe about two and a half hours before the game.
Well, we talked with your partner, Bob Beers, earlier in the hour, and I said, you know, I was surprised they even put Bergeron back on the ice last night after that hit. And I know he wants to play, and I know he's willing to play and gut it out, but I almost feel like, you know, that might be a point where you say, okay, Patrice, listen, we know, but we need you to be healthy, and we can't afford to risk you. I kind of, you know, take that same approach today, that if he's banged up, like, I'm willing to let this one go for the greater good here.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I think for every player, he knows his own body. He knows what he can withstand. But I will agree with you when it comes to some of the off-ice staff. You know, hey, there's a bigger picture here. And here we are in the middle of November. And what do we forecast? What do we want for this team here going forward? But I think back to last season, Patrice Bergeron blocks a shot in Toronto, breaks his foot, plays the rest of the game, played the next night in Buffalo, and then went on injured reserve for the Boston Bruins. And we didn't see him until just before the playoffs started. Obviously, the stories are legendary, playing with punctured lungs. Hopefully Bergeron's okay. What they choose to do, my guess is, if that's the case, Ryan, I'm probably with you, that the Bruins will probably tell him, hey, let's see if we can make it through tonight's game without you. Is Wednesday a possibility? We have no idea. We have no idea what the injury is, but there's certainly a bigger picture, and he's a huge fixture for this piece up front.
Judd, you know, on that note, he is so important to this team. Let's say he can't go tonight. What do you think is the best plan? Is it putting somebody between Bergeron and Marchand and Pastrnak, or is it better off splitting those guys and just sort of trying to have spread the wealth, if you will?
Well, that's a good question. My guess is he'll probably try and split it up. I think we saw a little bit of that last night. I think you saw David Krejci move up, and he'll field a lot of those minutes. Chris Wagner will be reinserted into the lineup. You don't necessarily have to play him in the middle because I take that back. You're going to have to change some of the way you assess that. So does Joakim Nordstrom go to the middle? Chris Wagner can also play the middle. You've got some different options there. But I think he might try and spread the wealth to see if some of that scoring can trickle down. What the Bruins did well last night in fits and starts was keep the puck down low, especially the Corrali line. I thought Nolichari made a thunderous return to the lineup that was really good for the Bruins. They need more of that. The best way to defend is to play 200 feet from your net. So we'll see if the Bruins are able to do that. On the back end, and I don't know how much you guys have had a chance to talk about some of the individuals, I thought Connor Clifton really rose to the occasion. And Bruce Cassidy was fascinating heading into the game. He said, sometimes when you put guys in these situations, you'll have an opportunity to get an even better evaluation of guys. And I thought Clifton seized the moment. I thought Jason Spezza, who's been in the National Hockey League for a long time, probably thought, well, I've got a smaller defenseman, a guy who's playing his first game. I got this. You know what? I'm going to drop the gloves. Well, he got leveled by a couple of straight right hands, and now the National Hockey League is starting to become aware of what Connor Clifton is about.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, as we were talking about him a little bit ago, just, you know, some guys come into the league, you know, first time out, they're tentative, they're afraid to make mistakes, you know, and that causes them to make mistakes. He showed none of that last night, right? I mean,
no.
He, 19 minutes, for a guy in his first NHL game. He gets into a fight. He's going full bore from the start, from start to finish last night. It's exactly how you need a guy like that to play.
Oh, he was terrific. He played fearlessly. Did he make some mistakes? Absolutely. And I think that was anticipated. But I think of a play, and Bob Beers had pointed this out, second period, he is charging up the ice, center ice. He's got a head fake, deals the puck to his right, generates a great chance for the Boston Bruins. That's what you want to see. Can he? Now the real question is, for Clifton, for Zboril, for all the young kids, can you do it again here tonight? And can you do it again on Wednesday night if you're pressed into service? That's the issue. Can you play consistently and bring that in, night out, shift in and shift out?
And in addition to those guys, you know, it's easy to forget because we've seen a lot of him recently, but Lozon last night, 25 minutes. He's, you know, almost 6 minutes of shorthanded time for him. He's fit in really well in the time that he's been here. And obviously, you bring a guy up, you don't, and you know, at this point in the season, you expect that he's going to be a third pairing guy or whatever. Lozon's gets first pairing minutes last night and is fitting in well. And he and Grizzlick both have risen to the occasion here.
That's your shutdown pair. And Jeremy Lozon is the biggest guy that they currently have now on the back end. I think had Chris Breen been healthy, there was a chance that he would have been called up from Providence to take one of the spots. But Jeremy Lozon, to your point, if you look on the depth chart, he is, what, the 10th defenseman that they brought up, because Vakanainen was number 9. Lozon, number 10. But he's come in. He's played a controlled game for the most part. I think last year part of the issue was, oh, okay, he can play with a little extra enthusiasm. He's been able to find his spots, but he has made the play in front of him. He has played physically. He's closed ground. He's been a good skater. He's had a good stick, and he's been a smart player. He has looked far more experienced than a guy who has played 7 National Hockey League games.
Judd Surratt, he'll have the play-by-play along with Bob Beers tonight. 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock faceoff here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Enjoy the rest of the trip. Safe travels.
All right. See you, boys.
All right. He joins us from Arizona, of course. Before we wrap up, let's grab another quick call here. Paulie, you're up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub and The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Paulie?
Paulie? Huh?
Paulie's been hanging on. I wanted to give him a chance because he wanted to talk about Tuca.
It's a subject that I'm very familiar with.
Well, I know, because you and I both, I think, would be categorized by some as part of the Boohoo Tuca crew. So.
I think I'm CEO of that crew now. I think my position keeps elevating.
But, you know, on a normal weekend, if the Bruins didn't have 35 guys injured and didn't lose Patrice Bergeron potentially last night and see the captain down for at least a month, we'd be talking a lot more about the goaltending this morning, because Tuca comes in last night when they needed him, when they're really shorthanded, and he pitched a shutout for 60-plus minutes, and that's a big step for him right now, because we haven't seen him play anywhere near the caliber that he's capable of for most of this season so far.
No, and this is something to build off. Finally, Tuca has a start that you can point to and say, okay, now get rolling here. Now see what you can do. I mean, this happened in November last year with the Tampa Bay start.
Almost exactly a year ago today.
Exactly, yeah. So it's one of those things where, as great as that start was, I want to see the next start now. I want to see some positive traction here because, listen, you can be the biggest Tuca honk in the world, but he hasn't played well this year. I know the numbers, last 5 starts would say he's played well, but he really hasn't been in that groove that you're used to, and the groove that the Bruins need him to go on to really be at full strength right now. So I think that's a huge element from last night's game, and you know, it could have gone south really quickly. You know, and if it did, we're having a different discussion this morning. We're spending 2 hours talking about the mindset of Tuukka Rask, if you will. You know, I think last night he kind of calmed you down a little bit. He talked you off the ledge. He told you he can still be a factor for this team. They're not going to have to play Halak 50, 60 games. You know, like, this could be an even split. And I think they need that. I really do think they need that. So something to build off of, you know, like I said, for Rask, and hopefully he keeps it going here.
Well, and in the meantime, I think we'd expect Halak to play tonight, probably. I don't know that they've said, but you wouldn't anticipate Tuukka goes back-to-back after last night, right?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to figure out, right? Because I look at that and I say, okay, he doesn't play tonight. Well, then now he has 5 days between starts. And that's a little dicey, but at the same time, if you don't play Halak, that's 7 days for right. him. You know, if you play him
well,
in Detroit.
And he's coming off of, you know, that third period the other night, not exactly one to grow on, so you'd like to get him back out there because he's been too good.
Yeah, and he's been feast or famine, right? He's this last week plus. He was great last weekend, and then, you know, he wasn't good in the Vancouver game. He wasn't good against Colorado, so you want to see him get back on track here. So maybe this is the way it goes, right? Maybe the whole year is one goalie.
As long
great.
As one of them's hot at any given time, I think they'll be in good shape. Right?
That is a good point. I mean, it's for me though. It's hard. You know, it's harder to figure out a starter for tonight's game than I thought it would be. Because I'm sitting here going, well, maybe you want to get Rask, you know, actually rolling here. Maybe this is the way to do it. But there'll be plenty of time next week and the week after to get that happening, if you will. So. You know, I wouldn't go too crazy thinking about tonight's game. I'd probably go with Halak, just play the odds, if you will. But obviously, I think Rask is just a huge piece of what this team needs going forward, especially if Chara is out 6 weeks and McAvoy's not coming back and Vaakanainen is still out, et cetera, et cetera.
Thanks for sitting in this week.
Oh, anytime. This was fun. Haven't done this in a while.
Yeah, well, we'll be doing it a few more times as the season goes on, as travel schedules permit. So look forward to it. We'll
Billy
look forward
Jaffe's
to
musical schedule.
Yeah, exactly. Look forward to the guy's got like 12 jobs.
I mean, unbelievable. Yeah. He's everywhere. He is the Where is Carmen Sandiego of hockey media, and I love it.
All right, we've got Jim Murray coming up next. Joe Murray's here as well, so the brothers from another mothers, and we got that coming up next here on the Sports Hub. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning, 10-1 with the possible champion Mike Flynn. We'll talk to you then.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Bianco, the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Are you a Patriots fan? Do you have a car that needs insurance? Boom! I've got just what you need. I'm Matthew Slater of the New England Patriots. And when it comes to car insurance, consider yourself covered. Get the Patriots official auto insurance program from Plymouth Rock Assurance and get great football benefits from the Pats and quality car insurance from Plymouth Rock. It's the perfect play for any New England sports fan. Go to PlymouthRock.com/touchdown today.
What kind of a crastinator are you? You do your taxes April 16th. You change your oil every 290,000 miles, whether it needs it or not.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.